Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, if reducing your risk of heart disease by 90% sounds good to you, there are nine things you can do to reduce your chances of getting it earlier in life. Paddy Barrett, preventative cardiologist at the Blackrock Clinic, is here to talk me through it. Welcome, Paddy. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kabir.
The important thing to mention from the outset is we're not talking about total prevention, we're talking about mitigation of risk.
Correct. And I think it's always important to set that as a framework at the start here. The bottom line is when we use the word prevention, it's actually technically incorrect. We're really talking about delaying the onset. The bottom line is that if you live long enough, you will develop coronary artery disease. The key thing is to not get it early in life and ultimately to get to the end of a long and healthy life and die with coronary artery disease rather than from it. And there's ways to seriously set the odds in your favour.
OK, so we're talking about lifestyle changes primarily, and a lot of these are within your control.
Correct. And so we know that there are four major pillars that we're going to be relying on. That's going to be exercise, nutrition, sleep, and stress modification. But we know that getting those factors right early in life are much more likely to then lead you to those other factors in terms of blood pressure control, diabetes, the avoidance of, say, high cholesterol, limiting stress, etc. So it's the combination of all those lifestyle factors leading to the reduction in risk that ultimately reduces your lifetime risk of heart disease.
Okay, and you've identified nine of them, so that's one finger for each and a finger left over if you want to count them out on your hands. So if listeners want to go along with us here, you can raise one thumb aloft as we go through this. Number one, keeping your blood pressure in check. What's healthy blood pressure, first of all, and give us an idea of how to keep it in check?
So, simple terms, blood pressure is the risk factor that is responsible for the most early deaths worldwide. It's a risk factor that over 50% of all adults have, and the majority of those adults are unaware that they have it. So the first thing is to actually measure your blood pressure. It's a simple thing that you can do at home with a cuff over the upper arm. For the majority of individuals, you want consistent blood pressures in the low 120s or below, ideally, and that's the top number, what's called a systolic number. If you are somewhat older, we'll say kind of 80s and above, we're somewhat more lax about that. But for the majority of individuals who are adults, low 120s is what we're aiming for.
Okay. Anything in particular just that influences blood pressure that people could immediately cut out now or do now to help with that?
Reduction of a significant amount of alcohol will do it. Weight reduction and increasing physical fitness, we have shown kind of very clear relationships with.
Okay, there are common themes throughout. So as you mentioned there, number two then that you've identified is maintaining a healthy weight. Our rates of obesity in the country are pretty high, so we're not that good at managing that. Not entirely through our own fault, given the foodstuffs that are on the shelves. But how much can losing excess weight increase your chances of staying healthy for longer?
Say again, so we know that basically excess weight is one of the lead drivers of risk of not only heart disease, but many different cancers and also dementia. We know that reducing weight can significantly reduce that with that risk. The challenge with excess weight and obesity is having weight in the wrong place, causing a metabolic risk. So there's two general types of fat we are talking about here, subcutaneous and visceral fat. Visceral fat is the fat on the inside in your organs that is driving all that metabolic dysfunction. We know that, again, in terms of exercise and nutrition are key factors in terms of preventing excess weight. The real challenge is that using those levers of modifying exercise and nutrition are only modestly effective at actually treating excess weight to get durable long-term weight reduction. It's not to say that they don't work, but once you're trying to significantly reduce excess weight when you have obesity, the effectiveness of them over the long period is actually quite limited. And that's why we have to fall back on other therapies like weight loss medications.
Okay, and that's why you're here to talk about prevention, because avoiding type 2 diabetes is number three on the list of nine also related to excess weight and to a certain degree diet.
Correct. And these are all linked together. So we see them as nine separate factors, but they're all interrelated. And ultimately, they're all leading to the what we call a metabolic dysfunction. That is excess weight in the wrong place, causing metabolic dysfunction like high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. And they all link together. But it is, as I said, really important to recognize that lifestyle measures are hands down, bar none, the best way of preventing excess weight and the complications from it, e.g. diabetes. But lifestyle measures to reverse those complications are possible, but the efficacy is far less robust. And so we have to use additional tools.
Okay. Number four, keep cholesterol normal. Now, some people are just dealt a genetic hand on this, but you know, there are things you can do to help.
Correct. They're largely linked around the things that we've talked to before, but I would agree with you that a lot of the variance of high cholesterol in midlife is genetically determined. So your ability to push this around with lifestyle measures is somewhat more limited. And therefore, in these situations, we often have to go to medications much quicker for modifying cholesterol.
Like statins and things, is it?
Statins are one of the medications, but there are many other variants and options that we can use to reduce that.
Okay. Number five, and this is the one that regularly makes the pages of newspaper. Limit alcohol.
The dose that make it the poison. I say this as someone who drinks alcohol, but not a lot. There is no amount of alcohol that is good for you from a health perspective, but the greatest benefits in terms of alcohol reduction accrue in those who are consuming a lot of alcohol. So if you're consuming a minimal amount of alcohol, cutting out alcohol is often likely to only kind of modestly, if any, give you benefits in terms of a health perspective. So it's all to do with the proportionality here.
Okay, spell it out. What's, I know you've said, you know, nothing is better than some, but you know, some people's idea of modest is very different to others.
Correct. The literature points to up to two drinks a day for males. For females, and a little bit. For females, and a little bit less for males.
And when you say drinks, you're talking about a half pint or
correct.
A very small glass
of
wine.
Yeah, and so, but again, it's we put these arbitrary cutoffs, but it's very much linear. If you're drinking one to two drinks a day, probably not advisable. You're right up at kind of the limits where we see kind of very significant increased risk. But even below that, we actually do see increased risk.
Okay, apart from the habit forming issue of it being daily anyway. Number six, eat real nutritious food. Translate.
Simple terms, the bottom line is processed foods, for the most part, increase their risk predominantly on the basis that they're significant vehicles for carrying calories, for the most part. So there are likely to be things in processed foods that are not great for us, but the bottom line is that they are not particularly nutritious. They're typically low in protein, high in calories. And if we look at individuals who are given the option of eating processed foods, they will typically eat more of them over a period of time, which leads to all the problems that we've talked about to this point.
Okay, number seven, manage stress. I mean, again, there are factors outside of people's control that may influence this, you know, colleagues in the workplace, family issues, take your pick. But what is within people's control, or what would you advise in terms of stress reduction?
So the first thing is to do what you had alluded to, is find out where the source of stress is coming from. And a lot of the time, it's about actually having a difficult conversation, maybe, with someone at work. Sometimes it's about getting actual professional support. Sometimes it's about reframing. And we know that there are excellent tools, things like cognitive behavioral therapy or differing counseling techniques that actually can significantly reduce your experience of stress.
All right. I mean, you know, some people who would seek professional help may be prescribed medication, and the medication they're prescribed overall on the cost-benefit analysis is worth their while taking, but it may impact on their metabolism and weight, whether that's antidepressants or antipsychotic medication. As somebody who's a preventative cardiologist, I mean, what help can be offered to those people, or what information is given to people when they're taking that on at the ground floor?
So what I would say is it really important to make the distinction between psychological stress and a psychiatric illness. They are very, very different things. There may be kind of relationships between the two, but in general, we are prescribing medications to people with psychiatric illnesses. Stress is the maladaptive response to the adversity that we face in life.
Okay.
And you can experience a lot of those things without any psychiatric illness.
Sure. Okay, number eight, a bit obvious, and this has kind of been known, at least as far back as the 1950s, don't smoke, how much does this contribute to early death and heart disease?
Far more than we would like to think, even though that rates have significantly reduced. The statistic that I use here is that in the United States, more people have died from smoking-related illnesses than all of the wars they've fought combined in total.
Which is quite a few.
Yeah, which is quite a few and a lot of deaths. But we know that if you look at smoking rates in Ireland, they have dropped to less than 20%. But if people start to do the math, that's kind of like one in five people. But if you actually segregate that out on based on socioeconomic class, if you're long-term unemployed, your likelihood of smoking is above 40 to 50%. So it's unevenly distributed across social classes.
Okay. And the ingredient in smoking that affects the heart, because I think it boosts adrenaline, is nicotine. So when we say smoke, we're not just talking about smoking. We're talking about...
Well, so
are we talking about vaping as well?
Vaping does increase cardiovascular risk, but nowhere near to the same extent. There's a
because of what the pressure on the lungs that's combined with tars and things in tobacco.
Correct. There's a large inflammatory component that drives up all of the risks with related to smoking related diseases that are somewhat unique to actually smoking, excluding the nicotine aspect to it.
Okay. And number nine, move your body daily. You know, how much exercise are you talking so that people, you know, at least take the minimal amount that's necessary to stay healthy?
So we know that about 10,000 steps per day will cut your risk of all-cause mortality, that is the chances of dying from anything over the next kind of 10 years, by about 50%. Now, 10,000 steps a day is a significant amount, but it is kind of a reasonable benchmark to aim for. About 150 minutes a week of moderate activity or 75 minutes of vigorous activity, so that's something like running. But the thing that people often miss out on is the two additions of resistance training in terms of building muscle mass.
Go on.
With that. So it's the two of them together. It's both aerobic and resistance training that have shown the greatest benefit. But this is not to confuse people, but the bottom line is that most people could do with moving more.
And by resistance training, you mean fairly simple things like press-ups and stuff like that in the home. And you know, how much resistance? I mean, do you want to be breaking into a sweat? You know, do you want to feel tossed? Tired and sore afterwards. Sorry,
not necessarily.
To get that
not necessarily. Your goal is to build muscle. To build muscle, basically, you need adequate protein. You need a caloric sufficiency to do it, and you need to be building against a progressive resistance and overload. So it's all proportional to your current ability.
Okay, you mentioned something there, and it's not one of the nine, but it was the impact of smoking, and you said that smoking in particular has an inflammatory effect on people. What other things cause inflammation and how does that affect your cardiac health? You know, are we talking things like sugar? Does alcohol also have an inflammatory effect? Any of the other factors you've mentioned there, like diabetes, is inflammation part of that whole package?
Correct. So this is, again, where we have fat in the wrong place.
Okay.
So this is excess fat in the wrong place. Visceral fat drives a significant inflammatory metabolic environment. Sugar, for example, is something that, if consumed in excess, will drive that risk. But sugar in isolation isn't inflammatory. So you have to consume it in excess. So when people say, you know, you take processed foods that is high in sugar, consuming it in a small amount in an adequately balanced diet is probably not going to be harmful.
Okay. And stress, obviously, inflammatory as well in terms of producing...
Generally because of the secondary consequences of kind of having poor nutrition, poor sleep, poor exercise, etc.
Okay. Paddy Barrett, preventative cardiologist at Blackrock Clinic. Thanks very much for joining me and running me through those nine steps.